Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies. You know the leaves on the trees are falling to the sound of the breezes that blow.
What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and of course, as we head into the Easter week, Good Friday, Passover. By the way, happy Passover, happy Easter, happy Good Friday. And of course, we have a market that would probably be somewhat slower this week. We wouldn't expect a lot. Now, of course, just because we're not expecting it doesn't mean it won't happen, because the one thing we do know is markets do not announce themselves nor their intentions. And of course, we saw some pretty wild action last week. For the way it's been, a 200 point swing up and down was fairly interesting. But again, I think that this week may be a little bit slower as we get through the holidays. A lot of people will be on spring break and just a whole bunch of reasons to believe that not a lot will go on. But of course, we know about the bombing in Syria that could create some activity. There could be some retaliation. Again, we just don't know. I want to make sure that you just understand what to look for here. Certainly, I will call the top of the market in. It doesn't mean that we won't get a rally, but I don't think we'll make new highs. I think that would be the trigger saying that I'm wrong. But I don't think that we'll see that. I think what we're going to see is continued making lower highs, and that will eventually lead to a much sharper break. But I think as we look at it from this standpoint, we are definitely in the sell the rally mode. And when we sell the rally mode, that's what we're looking for, is a reason to sell and looking for a short position. Now, if you're an investor, then obviously you're just either hedging or doing nothing. But I would not dump a long-term position just because in the short term, I think that we're going lower. I think that's where many commonly make a mistake and they liquidate and get into cash. Again, I don't think you should be in cash. You should be hedged, but if you're not hedged, then you can hold as long as you don't need that money tomorrow. I think that's something that is very valuable to you, is to have that opportunity. All right. Because again, the markets will eventually, even though we're bearish in the short term, will eventually go back up again. And we will continue to watch that angle of it. So, but we did have some interesting things, and of course, then there was a story of Elizabeth Warren and her nonsense and complaining about women, which we talked about a little bit last week. But the Jeffrey Lacker thing is kind of interesting, and my questions are very simple. Did he tell anybody else? This Medley Financial. Medley Global, they're claiming partially that they're immune to any prosecution because they can't give up some information because they're media. So they're claiming the First Amendment. I think that's a crock of shit. Excuse me. But I think that when you look at the overall picture, this is not good. All right. This is something that is really a tragic event, because if he indeed did give out the information, which he admits to, so it's not like he didn't. How many times did he give it out? I love this where it's the first time. I got caught, that was the first time. I love that. And of course, I don't buy that. But what bothers me even more so is, did others do it as well? There's only been one, I believe, as to my knowledge, there's only been one Fed person that's gone to jail for something of this nature. And I'm wondering, are there others that are influenced? Is there other that have passed information? It seems to me that the big guys are always immune to this major prosecution. And, if you don't know what I'm talking about, just look at, JP Morgan and the whale trader, or Wells Fargo and their thing, or Bank of America and their thing. Everybody's got it, but nobody gets in any trouble. And of course, they've said that Lacker will be not charged with anything. And I want to know why. I think that, you know, you and I, if we'd have done the same thing, would be going to jail. Ivan Boesky, Michael Milliken, Roger Ramdam, and Steve Cohn, and others have gone to jail for less. I mean, that is the value of information, if you remember Gordon Gekko, right? And that information, you know, you wonder how many of these major hedge funds that use Medley benefited from making these calls. And I'm not going to mention any names because I don't want to get in any trouble, but there's some that there has been some big braggarts on air talking about how smart they are, and are they that smart, or did they have this inside information going? Did they know the quarterback wasn't going to play and nobody else thought he was going to play? All right. You know, did they know it was the San Antonio Spurs and they were going to sit everybody for a game? But yet the bookmakers thought that there was going to be that everybody was playing. So my point is very simple. All right. You know, you cannot be giving out this kind of information. It's way too valuable. And we've all seen those funky moves like 10 seconds before or 20 seconds before the Fed is going to actually announce. And did you ever wonder, you know, did that mean anything? And I think that becomes the bigger issue. All right. Again, this is something that is very, very serious because, again, I find it hard to believe that this one person gave it out one time only and nobody's ever else ever done it and it's never happened before. That's always something that I find, you know, again, it just doesn't measure up logic. Now, I'm not accusing anybody because I don't know. I do know that Ben Bernanke now works for a hedge fund, though. I do know that he backed off of the increase in 2013. I do know that on February 11, 2016, that Janet Yellen Janet Yellen called Draghi in England and Jamie Dimon bought the dead lowest stocks. So again, I'm not accusing. I'm just saying it just certain things, you know, they call it circumstantial. All right. Coincidence. It just doesn't add up in my mind. Now, maybe that's just my skepticism of things, or maybe that's my way of understanding because I did this and I've been on the trading floor watching how certain organizations, some tend to try to take advantage of the system. You know, we talk about spoofing the markets and all these other things. Well, you know, that's one of the problems that I have anyways, is when you start to see, you know, upgrades and downgrades and target pricing, which is ridiculous. Usually those people are looking for the opposite action. And again, that goes back to my trading days on the floor, because that was a fact, not it wasn't fiction. It wasn't me being paranoid. You could see it. You could watch it happening. So I always just wonder and I go, okay, so is this a one-off thing? Did it ever happen before? And, you know, is it going to happen again? And that's where, you know, Ron Paul has said many times, end the Fed or at least audit the Fed. And I would think that, you know, ending or auditing the Fed would be something that would be now should be more looked at, because now we're seeing evidence of a one-time deal. And again, is it one time or was it more than one time? And I don't know the answer to that. But I can certainly suspect that, you know, I always find it hard when somebody always tells me it was the first time. You know, it's not logical based on, you know, why would this be the time that you did it for the first time? You know, why at this stage when you're going to get ready to retire, would you do it for the first time? What is the reason? You know, there's so many questions that we're going to let it go. All right. But I did want to make everybody aware of it and obviously express my opinion, because one thing that really bothers me is that the big guys tell the regulators to go flip off while the little guys get screwed. And to me, that's just another problem in what we have going on right here, right now. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. And of course, you want to download the show every day at libertytalk.fm. Make sure you check it out and you get the Sporting Edge on the weekends. And we are going to have a new futures and a new hedging program kicking off in a couple of weeks. They'll be posted up on the website. I urge you to check it out because, again, we're going to need to be hedged. And I want to make sure that all my folks are ready to rock and roll. In the meantime, I'm going to step out here for a break. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz coming right back to you after the break with more. The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. Right back.
Yeah.
All
right, boys. Follow me.
Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with the one, the only, the very talented Jane King, Lila Max Media, The Katrina Report, and one of the best I know, Jane King. A little bit of excitement in the world as we decide to bomb Syria. What are your thoughts of that whole situation?
Well, I guess, you know, I was surprised how quickly it happened. I remember after 9/11 waiting for what seemed like an eternity for some action to be taken there. And for this to happen just 2-3 days after that chemical attack, and for such a quick change, I mean, for the president to, you know, basically say a couple of years ago, you know, we shouldn't be involved in that stuff, to the press conference order this week talking about how moved he was by seeing the children, which we all were, and that was horrendous to see, to airstrikes, to get that all together while he's meeting with the Chinese president, is pretty amazing. And it's just fascinating on so many levels because, I mean, it shows Syria that we're serious and we'll move quickly. And this is a new administration, and they were severely misjudging what was going on in the U.S. And it also sends a message to Russia, and it sends a message to China. I mean, with the Chinese president, their meeting while this takes place kind of puts him in a little bit of a lesser negotiating position. And the whole thing is just absolutely fascinating. And I do agree with the action. We've let this stuff go on with Syria for far too long. They have been, just steamrolling international regulations about chemical weapons and behavior. And somebody's got to come in and tell them we have morals to live by in this world, and you're going to abide by them.
And I agree. I mean, I thought it was really interesting that it was kind of like when he was saying goodbye to Ping that they actually were doing the bombing as they were shaking hands. It was kind of interesting how that timed out. Wasn't it kind of strange?
It is. I mean, I've said this to you before. I mean, whatever you think of his politics, I mean, the guy can handle so much. I mean, I can barely keep enough milk in my refrigerator for my kids to drink. And here he is, like, meeting with the leader of the world's second biggest economy, so much at stake for trade in North Korea, and he's got this other thing going on the side, bombing Syria. Unbelievable. There are a handful of people in the world that could handle all that.
And he's one of them because I think he's like a robot. He's got a battery. He just keeps going. He never sleeps.
He must have some kind of genetic mutation that, like, makes him, like, you know, he's not vulnerable to stress and worrying what everybody thinks of him. So it's really unique.
Yeah, no, it is. And of course, it was very tragic, the chemical attacks. And of course, this has got to stop. And thank God, I think that we have somebody now who realizes that and wants to step in and go ahead and take care of it. What do you think that'll do to our relationship with Russia? Not that we have much of a relationship with them anyways.
Well, you know, it's interesting to hear some of the analysts and people who, you know much more about the situation than I do speaking about it. And basically, the Russians were warned that this was going to happen. So they were able to get people out. And they could also apparently have some weaponry on the ground in Syria that is meant to shoot down Tomahawk missiles, and they didn't use it. Now, they made like a public statement that was, you know, kind of scolding at the U.S., but their actions say otherwise. So I don't think this is going to hurt our relations at all with Russia.
Yeah, I do believe that both believe, you know, that we could both extinct the other, right? And if that happens, then the world is over. And I think that's one of the reasons that keeps overall peace. I mean, I know we have some things that sometimes charge up a little bit, but overall, I mean, certainly I don't expect to see something between China, Russia, and the United States, because, again, that could be the end. And I think there's more important things to worry about that we can take care of. But now the markets melted down for momentarily after the bombing. And, of course, that lasted about 30 minutes. And, of course, the markets have rallied back. And again, that's one of the things that I always try to teach and tell everybody, hey, you know, let the markets dictate. And don't get caught up with the panic or the overall noise that goes on, because at the end of the day, the financial markets will tell you if it's something to worry about. What do you think about that?
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, there's always this initial panic, and then everybody kind of looks to see what's really going on. I mean, it was a strategic strike. It was just one airbase. It was kind of, it seems like at the moment, more of a signal than it was any kind of indication of a future more bigger war with Syria. So I think the markets see that. And I think, you know, oil is up, probably because Syria's friends with Iran and Russia. So oil might have a longer lasting impact from this. But stocks, I think, are more concerned about, you know, some of the things we've talked about. I mean, just growth, jobs, tax reform. And we're going to go back to that really quickly.
Yeah, no, I think that, you know, of course, that's always something that needs to be, you know, that's important to the financial part of the world. I mean, yes, this was a little bit of panic, and but I think that the market see for exactly what it was. This was Donald Trump in the United States sending a message saying, hey, you know, new sheriff in town, don't screw with us. And I think the markets reacted. But the bottom line is they were only down 146 at the low, which is not even a full 1%. I mean, it's 0.75%. It's not even that's like a burp somewhere. Right. I mean, when you think about it, I mean, we've had a 200 point swing every day this week. So why would I even be concerned about that? So I think that this is one thing that we overanalyze. And I think that that's one of the things. And I wrote a note on Friday morning. Just everybody say, hey, look, don't panic. Don't get nervous. You're going to hear media. Do not let the media convince you to either buy or sell, because you're going to have one side is going to be praising him. The other side is going to have the same contempt they always have. And it just doesn't matter. But I thought it was interesting that Chuck Schumer actually gave Donald Trump a little bit pat on the back, I think in his own way. But it was interesting because and even Pelosi said it was a proportional response. And I thought those were good things because, look, at the end of the day, don't we need just to work together?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I noticed that, too. And I thought, gosh, in some kind of weird, strange way, could this airstrike be the thing that brings us a little closer together? Maybe, hopefully. I mean, that would be, you know, gosh, out of nowhere. And for that to happen and that be the thing that causes us to work together would be really amazing. I mean, I think one thing that is kind of starting to happen now is that we're starting to see things make a little more sense. So, like, there were, you know, we saw the chemical attack in Syria in 2013. Nothing done about it besides threats from the previous administration to do something, the red line. And but now it's like, okay, I say something and I do it. And it just seems like the world is starting to have a little more order and make a little more sense. And there's accountability for things. And I think that is good. I think that's good for investments. I think when you kind of know the rules and you follow the rules and you do what's right instead of this kind of like wishy-washy, everything's unclear, nobody knows what's going to happen, that's been hurting us for the past 15 years. So I think this is a good thing if we can kind of get the whole world straightened out a little bit.
I would agree with that. And then, of course, we've got Gorsuch now going to be on the Supreme Court. What did you think of the nuclear option? I understand their point, or the Democrats' point of view from the Merrick Garland. I mean, I thought that Merrick Garland should have been on the court as well, but he wasn't. And what's your thoughts of this whole process here right now?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of thought so, too. I thought that he should have at least got a hearing. That was, you know, but they didn't do it that way. You know, I guess if you just look at you know, all the hypocrisy that's going back and forth. So they do the filibuster against Gorsuch. The Republicans do the nuclear option. Before that, there was Joe Biden saying nobody should nominate a Supreme Court justice in the last year of their presidency. I mean, it's just politics is normal. And if everybody would just quit being so just tied to their party and so strident in their party and just try to work together and problem solve, I mean, we probably would have had Merrick Garland on the court as well as Gorsuch. So it's, you know, I mean, I just think this all this party stuff and everybody arguing is just so counterproductive to what we really need to do.
I agree. And last but not least, what's going on with financial literacy? We got anything new coming up? I know that we're still waiting for Bubba to get an invitation.
You're on the list. Okay, so we're actually a new one. Okay, so there'll be a new one released on April, the week of April 11th, and that's going to be with the head of the Financial Endowment, the National Endowment for Financial Literacy and Education. So, Ted Beck, a great guy, talks about why our grandparents learned about finance and math class when they were young, like elementary, and we don't teach it today. And then there's a couple more in the pipeline. T. Rowe Price did a study about the lessons that parents teach their kids about money. And we're also going to talk to Rachel Cruz. So she's an author and the daughter of Dave Ramsey. So all that stuff coming up over the next month or so.
Awesome.
Ka-ching with Jane King, iTunes and Google Play.
Awesome, Jane King. You're awesome. Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thanks,
appreciate
Tom.
You. That's our friend Jane King, who always comes on and takes care of us and gives us her insight of the markets. In the meantime, this is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz. We're going to stop out here for a break and come back with Matt Demeter from DemeterResearch.com. But in the meantime, LibertyTalk.fm, the only station you need. You can download the Bubba Show every single day, as well as the Sporting Edge on the weekends. And, of course, don't forget, brand new Bubba's Bottom Line, available at BubbaTrading.com. And this week's edition is on the Fed. The Bubba Show, Todd Bob Horowitz, will be right back after the break. What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Cialady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with The Bubba Show's expert technical analysis, Matt Demeter from DemeterResearch.com. And Matt, what's up, my man?
I'm doing well. How about you, Todd?
Well, I could be doing better if the markets weren't so choppy last week. Now, again, I'll tell you what I take away good from last week, in my opinion. A, we had almost a 200-point swing every single day, and it was not straight up or straight down. It was, if they were taking them up, they would bring them down. If they were taking them down, they'd bring them back up. And at the end of the day, the end of the week, I believe we closed within, a couple of points of unchanged for an entire week of a lot of movement. What'd you see?
Yeah, it was kind of a mess. It was a lot of choppiness. The Dow closed flat. I mean, the S&P was down 0.3%. So it wasn't that there was movement inside the week, but which we tried to take advantage of as well. But I think the bigger picture, we're still looking forward to a much bigger decline.
And I agree. I'm going to say this. You tell me what you think, if you agree or not. I say the tops are in. I say that we've made over the last, maybe since March 1st, actually, which was the blow, which is what I called the bluff, and I believe you did as well. We've made lower highs since then. And you still have a lot of people trying to buy and running to buy this dip. Every time the market sells off a little bit, you have people jumping in. And with margin at record highs, to me, I say the next big move is down. What do you think?
I agree. I don't think these markets are anywhere close to a big bottom yet. The next big move is down. We have been making lower highs with the exception of the NASDAQ 100. That's the only thing that's been, the strength there has been pretty impressive. Everything else, I think March 1st was the high.
It is amazing how strong the NASDAQ is when you look at it. I mean, it was amazing when you watched Amazon. To me, it looked so much. Now, you're too young to remember this, but it looked so much like the late 90s when you watch Tesla and Amazon going crazy. And again, yes, I know Amazon makes money. I mean, they should make more, but it's still, the price action was ludicrous. What was going on? And even the NASDAQ, how strong it really is here. It's like nobody believes that we can ever have another sell off. What do you think about that?
Well, I mean, if you look at valuations, we're good. I mean, there's a pretty good analog here. The valuations are getting close to what they were in 2000. So, and actually, I do remember the late 90s. I was participating in it, and I was actually getting pretty nervous at the time. I didn't have any technical skills back then, and I just, I was just looking at it from a sentiment point of view. When that last 3 months of the run up in early 2000. Was insane. I mean, as just from a sentiment point of view, everybody was talking about what stocks they owned, and that was the conversation at every dinner and I've been to and so forth. But anyway, I don't know if it's quite that sentiment wise. I don't know if it's quite that bubbly, but valuations are getting there, and the charts are not looking good either. So.
I mean, and you talk about sentiment. I mean, we have consumer confidence at 20-year highs. I mean, all these gauges that they talk about. And to me, that's okay, great. That should be towards the end then. When everybody gets so positive, it's typically the end, and when nobody believes it, and I guess one thing that really pisses me off, Matt, is when I hear guys on TV, you're talking about that this time is different. Now, you and I both know. Now, you know, obviously you're so purely technical that you don't get involved in this day-to-day crap, because I'm in the media and I have to understand what they're saying. And to me, it's so ridiculous that this time is different. I mean, the markets look like underneath. It looks like the bricks are falling out from the bottom, but nobody's really paying attention. It looks like the foundation is starting to bust a little bit. You agree or disagree with that?
I totally agree with that. They're going to look – trying to make a contrarian call and say, hey, we're going to pull back. You're going to – unless you get it exactly right, which, you know, for a while I've been saying, you know, we both been saying it's time to be cautious. We're getting towards tops. You look like – you know, you risk looking stupid because, you know, the trend continues and it continues. And the guys that are on TV saying, oh, everything's fine, we'll keep going up. They're going to look great, you know, as long as the trend continues. But at some point, you know, we're going to turn, and then they're going to change their tune. They're going to wait until the trend has already changed, and you've already missed the top, and we're already well off the highs. At some point, they'll say, you know, you'd be 5% down, 10% down, and then they'll say, oh, maybe it's time to turn bearish.
Right.
But anyway, yeah.
No, I agree with you. And this goes. See, and this is what always bothers me, Matt. Is you've been talking about this for months, all right? We both have. And not that to sell. You never told. And you bought plenty of things going forward. You had some levels you're looking for. So, again, you're not really caught up more with an opinion. You're basically just, this is what the charts are telling me. This is what I'm going to do. And, of course, you did call the top of the bond market. And you also called the recent bottom. So, again, your work is as pure as it gets. But what bothers me is that, you know, when you give me the commitment of traders report every week, I know that these guys that are out there mouthing off about how good things are, they're shorting like crazy behind the scenes. And that really bothers me more than anything else. That is the problem that I think is when you have guys trying to actually manipulate people by giving things, because we know that the big banks are shorting like crazy, correct?
Correct. I mean, you know, they've had, like we talked about, they have their largest Dow futures short position that they've ever had. If you look at sub aspects of, say, Russell 2000, for example, the banks, you look at the bank participation reports and you see that the banks for the past 3 months, I think, have not been more short Russell 2000 futures than they are right now. So for the past 3 months, they have massive short positions on. So, if the same representatives from, you know, these big banks, if they're coming out and they're saying, oh, you know, this can continue for a while, then why are you betting so heavily against it?
No, and that's what I'm saying. So
yeah.
All that being said, so we had a relatively flat week. What did you make of the action, and what are some of the targets you're looking for this week?
Well, I don't think we're going to get a lot more. I don't think there's really a good reason to expect much more upside with in the short term. I think we'll get a little bit. I think we'll, get an opportunity to sell slightly higher. But, when we had the, Tomahawk missile attacks, Thursday night, Dow futures, for one, broke its bullish pattern. Usually you don't see lows in the futures occur overnight alone. Usually you see it happen again, during a daytime, which we haven't seen yet. And when that happened, it broke the bullish pattern, the shorter term patterns that I have for Dow. So I think now we're just waiting for, during the daytime, during normal trading hours, 9:30 to 4, I think we're going to get a good sell-off. It's going to break support, and then we're really going to, at that point, the floor starts falling away.
So are the commercials now holding record highs in volatility as well? Or, because volatility has actually kind of escaped a little higher, right? It's not been beautiful, but if you go look at a chart, you'll see it's kind of been climbing, been making some higher lows in volatility. What are you seeing there?
Well, yeah, I mean, they always, if we get a little bit pop in volatility, they sell, and if it pulls back, they buy. This last week, they did sell some, so now they're under 100,000 contracts. I think they're about 96,000 contracts long. It's still a very large position, for context, back in May 2015, when we did hit a top, they were just over 100,000, and by the time we got to the August plunge, they were somewhere in the 80,000. So we're still over that. So I just nothing in volatility makes me concerned that, you know, I believe they're still looking for higher volatility. So I do think, you know, their positioning suggests higher volatility, and that fits with, you know, with the patterns and their positioning in the index futures as well.
No, I agree with you. And so what are you looking at here? You know, obviously oil had a big spike up on the news. But I actually look at it this way. I thought oil ran to 52, 53, which is what we would have expected that off of the 47 anyways. And then after that, you had 5 years ago, oil might have gone up $10 on a day like that because of what was going on. And it went up two, or not even two, went up under a dollar. And it actually broke during the day. What did you think of that action?
Well, we ran it. So we've been talking about this declining resistance, these declining resistance lines that I'm looking at. And we ran into the one that, you know, caused the initial, you know, drop, you know, a few weeks back, about a month ago. And now we're back at it. But when I'm looking at the indicators, it looks to me like there's room for oil to push higher. And I'm thinking the target here is going to be about 55, 50, 50 to 56, and I think at that point we'll get short again.
All right, again, I don't see it quite that high, but again, that's what makes a market. And certainly, you know, people were emailing me at night on Thursday night and saying, "What do you think? What do you think?" And I said, "Sell." Sell, Wilson, mm-hmm. Sell. I'm, you know, certainly from that point on a blowout to the upside, I think that looked like it was a reasonable spot to sell. You know, I don't see it going past, but, you know, I hope your trend line is declining again. So at least it'll give me some hope that I'm right. Because,
yeah. Yeah. No. Well, what's sort of not satisfying about the bottom that we got, you know, maybe was it two weeks ago now? It didn't hit any major support, didn't hit target support. So it's incomplete to the downside. So I'm leaning bearish. It's not like we got long at the bottom. All we did was cover. When we get up to where we are now, like I said, it's resistance. If we pop, I think we're looking at
you're right. Look, your targets are always good. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz with Matt Demeter, DemeterResearch.com. We're going to come back and talk more oil and talk about some of the other markets when we get back. But make sure you go to libertytalk.fm and download The Bubba Show every single day, as well as The Sporting Edge on the weekends. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be right back with more from Matt Demeter after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Welcome back to The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz with Matt Demeter from DemeterResearch.com. So, Matt, we were talking about oil, and I feel that we're, you know, at the top, and you think there's some room, and I said hopefully there's a declining resistance, and you said the pattern's unfulfilled to the downside. What do you mean by that, and explain to everybody what you're looking for?
Well, when we talk about our declining resistance levels, I also have inclining support, and the inclining support was not reached. So that means it's, you know, it's going to act like a, you know, it's going to have a magnetic pull. It's like gravity. So it should pull it back down into the mid to low 40s before it hits any real significant support. It's a projection that we're looking for to have happen. But, you know, oil, you know, it can ping pong between minor levels before, you know, it finally gets down there. So we have a resistance level that's actually, unfortunately, it's inclining and it's at about 55, 50 to 56. So I think that's, you know, our upside target. That's where I'd be more than happy to get short again. And then, in fact, right here is not a bad place to get short. It eventually needs to get down into the mid 40s. But I think, you know, we'll get a little more extension to the upside, and that's what I want to short. Then we have a much more powerful declining resistance level, but it's still up in the 60s. I think it's right around 64 at the moment, but it's declining fast. It's declining 50 cents a week.
All right.
But we've been, yeah.
So by the time, you know, I'm 100.
By the time this thing all works out, I think we're just stuck in a trading range of oil is what I'm trying to drive at. We're going to be, I think, between, you know, the mid to high 50s to the low 40s for, you know, probably the rest of the year.
I can see that. And again, that does make sense from a fundamental standpoint. I know you're not a fundamental guy, but from a fundamental standpoint, I refer to the action in with Syria. And, you know, again, 5 years ago, oil would have been going up, going crazy. Because they were afraid, but we make so much oil here, and we've got over 200-year supply. So I would not be surprised to see range bound. In fact, I've told my guys that, you know, are looking to buy oil for to hedge against fuel costs, that down in the 40s is where I'd like to do it, and not the high 40s, the low 40s, and we'll see what happens there. And of course, I know you've been trying to buy some DBA, some agriculture stuff. So what are you seeing in the ag spaces here?
Yeah, I mean, we've been waiting. This has been a long, you know, drawn out bear market. And if you look at the DBA, that ETF, which is supposed to cover, I think, about 13 agricultural commodities, you know, it's just been in a slow grind to, down. And, you know, we're looking for potentially a bear market bottom right around in the low 19. So, maybe around 1920 is about where we're looking for that for at the bottom. I'm not sure if I'm not 100% sure that is the, you know, bear market bottom low, but it will definitely be at least a, you know, like an intermediate term low. We'll get a good bounce out of that area. So agriculture as a whole, I think, will be bottoming this year.
Does that change your view on soybeans? I know you think they're oversold here, but I know you're also been bearish quite a while, and obviously a very good call. Does that change your view on soybeans independently, or are they still bearish in a group of that you think is going to start to turn bullish?
On an independent basis, I think soybeans still haven't bottomed. They're one that I think still has further to fall, and even though I'll be, you know, bullish more, you know, the rest of the space, I don't like soybeans still bearish.
I mean, that makes sense. Look, again, everything is independent, and I have no, you know, I have no problem with that. I mean, you know, again, I think that 940 is a pretty good spot to buy. You know, I mean, but I was a big seller at 10, and, you know, at once we broke 10. So I think that obviously they have some room, and we probably will see a dead cat bounce, and, you know, we don't go straight up. What are you thinking about in the livestock markets? To me, now hogs have come down pretty substantially and now look to be probably somewhere near a bottom in my eyes, and cattle looks to be somewhere near a top in my eyes. But, you know, I'm not sure if we agree on that, but go ahead and state your case.
Well, just to backtrack on soybeans real quick, I agree with you. They are very oversold, and they have hit either hit short-term support or they came very close. So I think, you know, it's a good, you know, call to be at least short-term bullish soybeans. But, like, you know, my case is I'm more longer-term bearish. Getting over to livestock, I think cattle, you know, for whatever reason, I mean, you know, if you look at the commercial positioning, it's more extremely short cattle, and yet I'm looking for higher prices in cattle. I think it's going to outperform hogs. I think it's, you know, the rebound that we got on Friday, I think it came from the right place for one thing, and I think it's going to go higher. Hogs, I haven't paid as much attention to. They don't, but looking at it now, I don't think it. It doesn't look as bullish to me. I think hogs have more downside. So if it were me, if I had to play this, I'd actually go long cattle and short hogs. But I don't. The only way we're playing it is through the cow ETF, and for that, I'm looking for cow that ETF to more or less consolidate in probably a choppy range here for a little bit, and then I think it's going to break to the upside.
I could see that too. Again, I look for, you know, things. I mean, I'm looking actually personally just for a very big year for farmers and producers. Mm-hmm. But I think that there's a little pain coming before that we get the big upside. But of course, the farmers, they shouldn't care about that because they're holding anyway. So, you know, it's not like they're trying to trade it. They should be holding it, not worrying about trading it. But now, what are you at all concerned that the dollar is breaking out again to the upside? I mean, I know we've got some room before we get there, but obviously the dollar actually mimicked gold, which was, I mean, actually mimicked gold and oil until Friday. What did you think about the dollar last week?
Well, I mean, last time we talked about, we were looking for, last two times, I think, we were talking about a little bit of a bounce that we should get in the dollar. We were talking about 101. That's where we've gotten to. I think that the, you know, further upside in the dollar is going to be pretty hard to achieve. I think we're looking for resistance from here to about 101.50 in a dollar index, and maybe just slightly above that, 101.55, something like that. But I don't think there's, and if it does break beyond that, then it's gonna, then to me that's gonna be a breakout for my patterns. And then if you know, we just entered a short position at the end of Friday, and we will add to it up to 101.50. If we break above 101.50, we have to reevaluate and probably just cover. But that also fits with, you know, the euro. We were looking for the 105 zone, 105 to 106 zone in the euro. We're now in that zone, that support zone. I think euro could pull still a little bit lower, probably all the way down to 105 even. And then I think that's probably going to be as low as euro falls. And then I think, you know, we're set for reversal up in euro and down in the dollar.
Now, will you play – now, again, one thing that's challenging, we're going to be – we got about a minute left just so you know. But one thing that I find challenging is that the euro is 60% of the dollar index. So is it – do you play them both when you decide to play, or do you play one off the other? How do you play that?
Sometimes, you know, it will play – we'll play just one because one, you know, because they're not perfectly, you know, inverse. Because like you said, it's only it's 60% still large, but you know, sometimes we'll just play both. In this case, I think a little bit more bearish the dollar than bullish the euro, but we'll end up doing both. The one that I want to get long more is the pound, which I know you've been covering, and then you've been in. This pullback's a good opportunity. I think if we get down into the 122s in the pound, that's a good buy. I mean, if you look at the, you also have commercials backing you up because they are still heavily, heavily long. And, you know, they're the smart money. So
we hope they're the smart money. But Matt Demeter's the smart money. He's been on top of the
market. I appreciate it.
Hey, you've been on top of it. I give you the credit for what you did. You called a lot of markets. Quickly, the bond market, we have room still to go on the upside, or is this about it?
Probably about it. We'll probably get a little bit of a pullback short term right here in the next, you know, couple weeks. But then I think, you know, again, back medium term, back to the upside, we'll get a bigger rally.
Got it. This is Matt Demeter, DemeterResearch.com. Matt, as always, I appreciate you coming on. Thank you.
It's always great to be here. Thanks a lot, Todd.
This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Of course, you know that LibertyTalk.fm, you can catch Matt because he's on every Monday. And of course, if you ever missed the show, you can go download it at LibertyTalk.fm every day. Also, the Sporting Edge is available on the weekends. And lastly, but not least, my future Emmy Award-winning Bubba's Bottom Line, now available at BubbaTrading.com once a week. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Everybody have a great day. We'll see you back here tomorrow. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Have a great day, everybody. Thank you so much.
Quiet up. Turn the noise down.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.